Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, you've got it right once again. Happy Friday, special Friday before Super Bowl. Mr. Mayor, good morning. Let me count your fingers. You didn't lose any fingers yesterday,
I have not. Didn't lose any fingers with Chuck. People said, did he see his shadow? If he sees his shadow, then he goes back inside.
Did he have, Mike, I was curious. Did Chuck, in that little house he has over at the Staten Island Zoo, did he have a couch and a Giants helmet?
But they push from the back to get him to come out.
Anybody's not happy either.
Well, somebody said, you know, is he going to see us predict six more weeks of winter? I said, let me get this straight. Seeing the sun, it's down in a valley. The sun doesn't come there until probably noon. It was overcast, and I may occasionally do dumb things, as I said, but I'm not stupid. What mayor would predict more winter? I mean, come on.
You don't want that. But how about your prediction for the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, prediction. We're going to do something that is going to help, doesn't guarantee, but will help the Giants' chances.
What would that mean?
4 years ago, if you remember, and I'm sure you do, we renamed a bar, Brady's, at 82nd and 2nd on the Upper East Side, changed the name to Manning's. That was back in 08, Super Bowl 42. It was, I think, clearly instrumental
in the win.
Terms of luck. The Giants beat the Patriots that year. Now, I don't want to take anything away from those on the field, but it always helps to have a little
luck.
Well,
you certainly don't want a Brady bar in New York.
On the other days of the year, we want them to have a good time, make a lot of money, and pay taxes, and have people drink responsibly and have good times, and they can do anything they want. But for this time, we think, and they think, the owners of the bar think it's appropriate to be Manning's. And incidentally, we're even giving the bar our winnings from the wager on the NFC Championship game. That was a giant sourdough pretzel from San Francisco. Mayor Lee, that was the deal.
Now, did Mayor Lee, did he actually drape the cable car?
Still to be done, and you can rest assured we will have those pictures in the local press. He's actually a very nice guy. I met him when I was out there about a year and a half ago when he was appointed, and since then he's run for office.
Well, I understand that you actually, coming up in the next hour, I've got David Gregory from Meet the Press, but you were going to be in Indianapolis.
I'm going to be on the field. Eat your heart. They haven't asked me to.
Right.
They have not asked me to. I've always thought if I owned a team, I'd be the quarterback, you know? The press wouldn't like it, the sports press particularly, the fans wouldn't like it, but I'd say, hey, it's my team.
You think you're tough enough, huh? Take one hit?
I don't know, but you remember that great movie, Heaven Can Wait?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That was me. Walter Mitty, or in this case, different actor. You know, Warren Beatty was just, that was... Wouldn't that be wonderful? You walk out there. They don't expect anything. You get out there and you make the deal with the lineman. Just block me once. You throw that great pass. And they say, I remember in the movie, the guy says, hey, I think we got ourselves a quarterback.
I believe it was George Plimpton, the writer.
He did everything.
Who did that was a quarterback for the New Orleans Saints when the New Orleans Saints weren't very good at all.
Didn't make any difference.
Whether he did well or not. But he actually suited up and out he went.
You know, when you get close to these guys, I remember giving the keys to the city to all of them 4 years ago. And they're big. But, you know, great athletes. And you talk to them. They have the same interests and fears like everybody else. And it's a job. They worry about their careers. They really care. A lot of them, when you talk to them, they have enormous respect for guys on the other side. I've always asked, you know, who else in your league, in your sport, do you think is really good? And some of them, I'm the only one. But most of them really have a lot of respect and, you know, say, I try to learn from this guy or that guy, or he's really good. So I met, for example, in radio, everybody says, John Gambling.
You're absolutely right. What's the difference between the guy that is great in the NFL and the guy that is good? I mean, there are moves. There are accurate.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of it's luck. You're in the right place, right time. But if you have luck consistently, that's skill. You got to hand it to the Giants, sort of a so-so mediocre first half of the season. And then they came on, and every game, the last, you know, they keep all of a sudden started winning, and they won in a ways that you said, they really are good. Manning is a great quarterback, but it's the whole team. I mean, you got a lot, you know, 11 guys out there on both sides, and you can see them playing together. And I've always thought that's one of the great secrets of good teams. They play together. I remember as a kid in Boston, I was a big Celtics fan, which gives me a little bit of angst when the Celtics and Knicks come. I like the Knicks, and I'd like to see them win. They're going through a tough
Very tough, yeah.
And I like the coach. He's a really good guy. And they got some great players, and I've done some events with a number of them. And, you know, I'm sure they're sitting there eating their hearts out. They'd love to win. You don't get to that level unless you have that desire to be number one. Number two is second place, and that's it. But they... the Celtics used to come back by train, because you didn't fly in those days, from a road trip, and you'd see them all walk together in their green jackets, ties up, shaking hands, autographs, anything, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And it was Ray Auerbach that put them together, and they played as a team. And he would never countenance anything where any of the players was a dissension. Didn't care what you thought in your mind, but you
But sure you could do it my way.
And you do it our way. It's, our I think way. He would have said our way right. rather than my way. And I'll never forget, they used to allow smoking in Boston Garden then. And he, when he lit up his cigar, that was the game was over. He just was comfortable.
All right. Well, you know what? Let me do this. I've got lots of things to talk about here this morning other than the Super Bowl and the like. Let me take a break real fast. We'll come back with Mayor Mike. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning on a Friday. What can you tell us about the kid shot over in the, up in the Bronx?
We're doing an investigation. You know, what I know is a young boy shot and dead. Apparently everybody said that he was, or a number of people said he was trying to flush some drugs down the toilet. Why the cop shot, I don't know. Typically in a situation like this, right away the police are taken off duty or off line duty and during an investigation, no matter what, no matter how what the facts are, always just to protect and everybody. And if they've done nothing wrong, back on duty. And, you know, Ray will deal with this. This surprisingly how few times police draw their guns and shoot. And, you know, it's always tragic.
But as you pointed out, you dealt with a cop shot this week.
You know, I was at the hospital, talked to him.
Amazing that you could do that.
You know, that I saw the bullet taken out of it. It just an eighth of an inch, maybe a quarter inch in either direction. The guy's dead. And here, he'll probably be fine. I said he's going to be fine. You know, there's a question. There's always some... it's a big bang to the head, so obviously there's always danger. But the doctors were very optimistic. And I talked to his parents and his wife. Most interesting was talking to him. I mean, you know, he was in pain, but he wanted to chit-chat and certainly recognized, hi, Mayor, thank you for coming, and talked to the police commissioner who was with me. And then his parents, and we went in with his parents. You know, as I said to the mother, you know, God was with him.
And which is tangential to that particular story is the fact that you and Deval Patrick, Governor Patrick of Massachusetts, have a television commercial running in the Super Bowl.
No, the mayor of Boston, Tom Menino.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom Menino, exactly.
Who started this mayor's coalition against illegal guns with us, and he deserves a lot of the credit.
Obviously, this is going to impact a lot of people, but this is really a message for Washington, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, the thing is bantering back and forth, Patriots, Giants, Giants, Patriots, but we both agree on, and the thing we agree on is getting guns out of the hands of criminals, out of the hands of people with psychiatric problems, and out of the hands of kids. And there are federal laws that actually say they can't buy guns. Unfortunately, Congress doesn't appropriate money or much money to enforce the laws, and there are a couple of places you can sneak through the law, like at gun shows, and they're unwilling to close those loopholes. And, you know, I don't know what it takes. Even a congresswoman shot, you know, nine months ago, and that didn't get them to do anything. All they said is we should have more guns.
You know, at least you're doing something about it. You believe, I know you believe so strongly in this, and that you put your time and your effort and your money.
My job is to protect the public, and protect the cops. This is my kids too, and my life and yours. I mean, you know, there's just too many guns, and nothing wrong with people having a gun, and as long as it's licensed in each state, and if states should have the right to license, and you should have the right to have a gun. But they just don't belong, in crowded big cities. They certainly don't belong on college campuses. In a lot of places, they want to carry permits on campus. Can you imagine?
I don't understand it. No,
this is just crazy.
You had the budget. You talked about the budget yesterday, and some of the numbers that you've thrown out are amazing. That people in some of the city agencies, the pensions cost more than their salaries.
Uniform services. Teachers are not as bad, not as high in some. The average of the city is something around 50, a little over 50%, which is very high compared to the private sector or most of the cities. But uniform services, they're over 100%. Now, the unions say, oh, that's because we haven't been hiring anybody. That's just nothing to do with it. The bottom line is we have very, very generous pensions. Hard to argue that. They're higher than virtually any other city, state, or private sector, for sure. And I've said we should... Number one, legally, we have to honor those. The state constitution even keeps the state from rolling back those pensions. So, you know, it's a little bit gratuitous to say that they deserve it and we should honor that. But we should honor that. I'm okay with that. But we cannot continue to give out pensions this generous. It just is not sustainable. And someday there really is going to be an enormous uprising. It should be now. And in fact, it's funny, with the pensions themselves, the actuary wants to reduce the assumed rate. When you decide how much money to put into the pension funds so that there'll be monies for the workers down the road, you have to assume that they're going to earn something in the stock market, bond market, whatever, however they invest it. And the assumed rate has always been 8%. To put that in context, the S&P, or the actual rate has been 5.6, even though it's assumed as 8 for the last 10 years.
That's going to mess up the equation, isn't it?
Well, if you look at the S&P for the last 10 years, it's unchanged. You would not have made a dime in 10 years if you'd invested in stocks on average. And interest rates today are 3% for a long bond, thereabouts, so you can't make any money in the bond market. So to assume that you are going to make 8% is so patently ridiculous it doesn't stand the laugh test. The actuary, who's a pretty good guy and thought long and hard about this, is trying to reduce that assumed rate to 7%. He'll need the Albany legislature to go.
Which is still laughable.
Still laughable, but at least it takes in the right direction. We put away money because you have to fund it right away. If the rate goes down, that means you have to put more money in right away. So we had $1 billion ready to go in, and then he said, no, I'm going to reduce it to 7%, but over the course of, some long time, 22 years or whatever it is. So all of a sudden, we don't have to put as much money in. We only had to put in $600 million, I think, instead of $1 billion. And so that helps a little bit on the budget. But what that really does is just move the cost to our children. Our children are going to have to pay everything we don't pay now. And so the city was trying to act as responsibly, even more, I think, more responsibly than the actuary. And he still has to finalize his numbers. But we were willing to put $1 billion in. We had it in our budget. Now we're only going to put $600 in because that's what he says we have to do.
You said that there's going to be an uprising, and you sort of said that it should be now. Do you hear from people, the people of New York City, on this question? Does Albany hear from New Yorkers, state New Yorkers,
you
on
know,
this question?
The editorial pages sometimes, but does anybody walk up to me in the street and say,
good job on the pension. Keep after him on the pensions.
I don't know. I suppose there's always some. But if I talk to some of the recipients, they'd probably say there is. It's not on everybody's front burner, but it should be because you don't realize what's happening. We are going to, in this country, spend 25% of our GMP on health care eventually at the rate it's going. That's not sustainable. You can't do other things. In the city, it's going to mean fewer services. There's a point at which, I tell you where it really hurts, and we hear it, is people are going to say, I don't want to pay any more taxes.
And they will stop paying those taxes.
Well, they don't have much choice in terms of paying their...
Well, we've seen in Greece where they hide everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder to hide here. We take tax evasion seriously, put you in jail for it, which they don't over there, which is why they don't pay the taxes. But 1% of the people who live in New York City pay 50% of the city income tax. And that 1%, if you were to lose a significant percentage of that, and it doesn't have to be a big percentage, then you really start feeling it. And no matter how much some elected official wants, let's go tax them all, it's not fair, they can move. Those are the people that can move. And when people say, oh, nobody moves because of taxes, you should take a look at where we send pension checks. City employees, when they retire, an awful lot of them leave the state and go to places with no inheritance tax and no income tax. It does influence people. It doesn't influence everybody. You know, most of my friends say this is a very high tax city and state, but you get a lot for it, and I'm going to stay here. There is a breaking point, however, and 1% pays 50%. Sure, it varies a little bit, but it's a number like that. So what we have to do is we want to attract wealthy people from around the world to come and live here because that's our tax base. And to the extent that we are successful in that, everybody else's taxes are reduced. The extent we're not, everybody else's taxes is higher. And there's always this feeling, well, we'll just have to raise or lower taxes, or if we save money, we can spend it on other things. You know, some people want more services. Some people want to pay less. Most people, some balance between them. But we're in a competition for other cities and other places. So you can live across the river and drive in. You can have an apartment in the city. If most of your year, half your year is spent outside the city, if you travel and have a place someplace else on weekends, then you don't have to pay taxes here. You have to pay them elsewhere. But elsewhere, if it's lower price, lower tax rate, that's what people do.
Your budget includes, I think, the $1 billion from the taxi deal.
Yes.
Which isn't done yet. And how about the reserve?
The bill is passed. There are some regulations to work out, but I do not anticipate any problems.
There's no question mark on that line.
There's always a question. But look, Governor Cuomo understands that we need taxi service in the other 4.5 boroughs. Governor Cuomo understands that we need this money. And Governor Cuomo doesn't have any interest in slowing us down. There's some things that he said he'd like to see done. We said we'd do them, we'll do them, and he'll approve it. This isn't a battle. You know, I suppose by your argument that it's not for sure, yes, it's not for sure people are going to pay taxes tomorrow. It's not for sure that the economy is going to be there tomorrow. But let's get serious. I do not worry about this. Governor Cuomo is in this with us, as are we with him. He depends on New York City being successful because we're a big part of the tax revenue for Albany. We depend on Governor Cuomo being successful because the state provides a lot of services and sends some of our money back to us. And for all these battles everybody keeps talking about, it just doesn't happen. I mean, you know, I don't think I've ever called Andrew Cuomo where he didn't, if he wasn't right there, he'd call back in half an hour or an hour all the time, instantly. And have we ever had an argument? I don't remember one.
Does the budget include all of the reserve?
We have used the reserve.
It up, right?
Yes. Yes. And a lot of that goes to making up for last year we lost $850 million in federal stimulus money for education and $850 million, something like that, in state education funds. Now, state education funds, the governor has in his budget to raise some of it, but it's raising it from a very low rate. In all fairness to the governor, I don't like to get cut back like anybody else, but he did cut us back same portion as we normally would get in aid. And so, you know, I wish he had more money, but you can't criticize him for doing that. Having said that, that's where a couple of $1 billion of our reserve went last year and this year. If you can think about it that way, it's to make up for other sources of revenue for education. The state used to pay for 50% of our education budget. Now they pay for a third.
Okay, so this year's budget, you've said nobody's going to no gigantic layoffs or
there's always
no
a disaster
taxes,
took place, but
and the rest. But the year after,
for 2014, the budget at the moment shows a deficit of $3 billion. That's the bad news. Let me put it in perspective. We have 17 months between now and then to work on it, And the economy is slightly improving, going in the right direction. And we have 17 months to keep reducing our expenses. We've reduced city employment by 20,000 odd workers, just under 7% over the last 10 years. And most of it without layoffs, most of it just with attrition. And we know we have this deficit, and we're going to have to keep working on reducing our expenses and finding alternative sources of revenue. Want to keep tourism growing and that sort of thing. Want to, you know, the Cornell's thing, it won't really be in place for a long time, but it'll start to attract businesses. Mm-hmm. All of that's good. Making the city business friendly, attracting people who can pay taxes from around the world, that's what we want to do. And this populist stuff of let's soak the rich. No, we want the rich to come here. And set up businesses here and buy things here and work here and pay taxes here. That's good for everybody.
All right, Mr. Mayor, lots still to do, but I need to take my break right here on the half hour, a little bit long. 26. We continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg on this Friday before the Super Bowl, and Blue Friday, I guess it is. Certainly not blue at Planned Parenthood. You stepped forward when the Susan G. Komen Foundation decided to unfund or non-fund Planned Parenthood.
Well, what Susan Komen does is they work on breast cancer, and I've done a number of events, and there are a number of Bloomberg employees that give money to it, and the company matches, basically my money matches. They decided to withhold monies or stop funding breast cancer screening at Planned Parenthood. And they can talk about what they did and why. I just feel there's no place for politics in healthcare. And breast cancer screening saves a lot of lives, and hundreds of thousands of women depend on Planned Parenthood for that. You know, there's something like 250,000 new cases of breast cancer diagnosed each year. And if you can find it early, you have a much better chance of doing something about it.
Your $250,000 was a matching grant?
They stopped funding Planned Parenthood. I stepped forward and said, look, this is, I think that Planned Parenthood does great work. This is in screening for cancer. But, you know, Planned Parenthood spends a third of their money on contraceptive things, trying to keep young kids from getting pregnant and, you know, people having pregnancies that they didn't plan, and then sometimes those things don't end, and some kids get born and have great lives and good parents, but a lot of them don't end well. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that Planned Parenthood does, I've always been a big supporter of. Anyways, I thought I'd just, I never like people to complain without doing something about it, so I stepped forward and gave some money. And these challenge grants always work very well. They get other people. They say, okay, if I give, it'll have double the value. And so I gave, I think it was $250,000.
There's already indication that others are following behind you as
well.
Lots.
Right. I think a lot of people are. You know, I've been a supporter of Planned Parenthood for a long time anyways. This gift was unplanned in terms of it just yesterday when they lost their funding, I thought I'd step in and try to get other people to do so. And if you want to help Planned Parenthood, you can call 311. We'll figure out the phone number. I'm sure they're in the phone book.
I was reading the story this morning about a decision that the city has made on the Upper West Side about retail space and the concern that some had about big box stores.
Well, I don't think the Amanda Burden City Planning is going to recommend this. I think the city council has to approve it. I gather it's very popular in the community. The idea is that if one store takes over all the ground floor, the public's choices are limited because there are fewer stores in the neighborhood, and particularly small stores. So the zoning here would restrict how wide a store can be on the ground floor, but they can then have that as an entrance to upstairs or downstairs.
So you could have a large store.
Oh, you can have a whole block store on the second floor or on the basement. And in fact, you know, you don't think about it, but some of the vertical malls, if you would, are starting to catch on. Time Warner Center is a vertical vertical mall, and it's phenomenally successful. People go up and down stairs and escalators and elevators to different floors for different stores. And in a city where we're constrained by space, you can't build out, certainly in Manhattan, and even in the other four boroughs, if you start building out, you have traffic problems and you can't get from one store to another. So density really does add something. But the disadvantage of density is there's only a limited amount of space. This sort of solves that problem. And when I first heard Amanda propose it, I thought to myself, oh, you know, government shouldn't be in the business of telling people what they can do with their private property. But we do zoning all the time. We zone things to make them residential or retail or commercial or industrial. We zone areas so that you protect manufacturing, because if you don't, you won't have any manufacturing jobs. So we restrict only manufacturing can be in a neighborhood. Art galleries down a few blocks down the southern end of the High Line. Only art galleries. Each of these has a purpose, and it does get government interfering with. But on the other hand, you don't want just unchecked growth every place, because what will happen is some things will get squeezed out that you really want. This is a good compromise, and I gather it's very popular in the neighborhood. The people in the neighborhood want it, and I don't think you'll have a lot of pushback. If a bank, for example, that wants to be in a neighborhood, it's in their interest to have lots of people on that street in that block. And so if there's lots of stores, they're more likely to have the traffic going by. If you enter the bank, if you have to take an escalator, stairs up or down, the ATM machine and the teller windows can be right there, but you can do other things on other floors. So after I thought about it for a while, I think that she's right, and I think the city council will approve it.
Do you happen to know, in the Time Warner example that you used, whether or not the higher a store is, the less traffic it gets? I'm sure they've done models.
Sure there's lots of it. I just know that from Related that this has been a very successful thing. I was actually in the building. I went to Michael LaMonaco's restaurant. It's got a great steakhouse in the Time Warner building for dinner the other night, and it was at 7 o'clock at night, and the stores were open, and there were lots and lots of people there.
Cost overruns at the World Trade Center. I've spent a lot of time on that this week, looking at it and talking about it. I don't think we're anywhere near understanding what this thing's ultimately going to cost.
Well, I don't know.
Do you?
You got to ask the Port Authority. The only one that I'm intimately familiar with is the memorial and the museum. And we're on time, although everything stopped, and we're on budget. The Port Authority has come back and said they think we owe them some money. We think that we're on firm ground, that we have written documentation. They agreed to do those things at their cost. But in fact, we think they owe us money because they're late in delivering promises.
I was going to say, when you delay anything, as you know,
well,
from
and we have in our documentation that if they are late, they owe us. You know, Bob Steele's been working with Pat Foy, and then they have to work with the two governors. My guess is you will work it out. And I keep thinking we're close, and hopefully we are. There is the provision in our agreements for arbitration. I've always thought better off just to work it out with people, and I'd rather have Steele in the room, and I think Foy is very competent. So you've got two good people negotiating, and then they've got to go back and explain to their principals, Steele to me as chairman of the foundation, not as mayor, and Foy is the executive director of the Port Authority, which is really controlled by the two governors, Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo. I just don't know what the truth of the matter is. It is so complex, John. I've said this 1,000 times. When somebody's going to write a history, and people will sit back and say, my goodness, it's amazing you got it done. You had, if you remember, Silverstein had bought the towers but never signed the papers. They were still waiting to be signed. The insurance companies, there was this lawsuits about one event or two events, whether separate incidents or not, because it depended on, it would influence how much money was paid. There are the families and all of the
please turn
other
off
people.
Your cell phones
and the families and all of the other interested parties. There's that we went through a recession in the middle of this. The design had to be made consistent with the real world safety requirements after 9/11, which makes things more expensive, but we just live in a different world, and this is an iconic place. There was a disagreement with the church, and democracy as Churchill said, the worst form of government, save all others. We had democracy, and there was lots of input from lots of different people. We've also had 4 or 5 governors of New Jersey, and I think 4 different governors in New York. And each of those governors have a say on the Port Authority, so things stop when you change governors. If you look at all of that, it's amazing we've come as far as we have. And whether or not we're – and it's also, incidentally, these numbers are so complex. I can give you a set of numbers, and I can explain to you and say we're under budget or over budget or on budget. A lot of it is a political thing of what you want it to – what numbers – numbers are a language, and you can use them to say a lot of different things, just like it can use – words to say a lot of different things. I think it's amazing how much has gotten done.
But I think you're right about the history and the book that will be written. It will show, however, I think, that the government bureaucracy is part of the problem and maybe not part of the answer.
Let me talk for a second another place I know about downtown, and that is off the site. Now, on the site, as chairman of the Memorial Foundation, a museum foundation, I have some influence, and we have that, and we have the fundraising. We've raised $450 million privately, and that money is going to the museum and to the memorial, not to help other people with their budgets. But just take a look at off that site, what New York City has done and the city government with the city council. We have redone all of Manhattan, almost lower Manhattan. Almost every street has been dug up, new sewers and water and steam and electricity and cable and all that sort of stuff. We have built schools and parks downtown. If you think about it, right after 9/11, nobody was going to live downtown. Every corporation was going to move out. It was going to be a wasteland. Today, it's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week community in a way it's never been before. Double the number of people living there. More businesses than ever before. Rents are going through the roof. Everybody wants to live down there. It's great transportation and views, and it's fun, and great parks and all of this sort of stuff. And that's the future of this city. So, you know, downtown is not just the 9/11 site, the World Trade Center site. It's the whole experience. And this city's done a very good job, I would argue, in downtown. 100% opposite what the pundit said. If you go back and read it, everybody said going to be a disaster. Crime is going to skyrocket because the city won't have any money to pay cops. We're going to be attacked by terrorists again and again and again. They were wrong on all that stuff. All the good stuff happened. As easily and as straightforward and as painlessly as you'd like. No, that's not the real world. You have ups and downs.
It's not New York.
But that's the difference between journalism and history. You have to sit back and have a little bit of a longer-term view and look at it from a perspective of the bigger picture and compare it to other cities. And nobody does that. It's amazing to me. Every city I talk to people, I had dinner last night with somebody from Chicago. And Chicago's a wonderful city. Rahm Emanuel's doing a great job. Richie Daley before him. They're both friends and whatever. But we have a city, then they just look and say, how do you do all that? We don't have we have a crime rate that's so low, it's has to be measured on a different scale compared to other cities. A growth rate has, and tourism, you can't put it on the same chart. And in my budget presentation, for all of the fact that construction slowed down and the economy slowed down, our vacancy rate is at the, you have to have everybody else, and you almost have to draw a different chart with us. It's so low.
Mr. Mayor, I know your schedule this morning calls for you to leave a little bit earlier.
Sorry about that. Sorry, I can't do any tweets or any...
Go blue.
Go blue.
Are you going to be there for the game?
Blue shirt, blue tie, blue sweater yesterday.
You're going to be there for most of the game?
Not all the game.
Oh, you are going to be there the whole game.
Yeah, because I want to be able to go on the field when the Giants win.
I'm going to Disney World.
You know, I don't have a lot of say in it, but hopefully the luck we bring by renaming Brady's Manning, that's going to make a difference.
Well,
it did 4 years ago.
Have fun up at Manning's.
It's a little bit early in the morning to have a beer, but I might just sip a tiny bit to show that I'm
part of the gang.
Part of the gang.
All right, Mr. Mayor, have a good weekend.